Okay, hi.
All right.
Thank you all for joining us. This is Louise Rothery speaking, and some of you may be familiar with the book that I wrote last year called Lest We Forget, A Salute to the Women Who Entered Corporate America Without a Roadmap. And it has led me to do a lot of research on women and women's issues and women's leadership and women's power. And then I met up with Chris, and we decided that we wanted to put this call together in large part to get some feedback from all of you who are participating, because we seem to be sort of coming into a new age of women. And I think women are finally realizing that their leadership style actually works a lot better in today's global economy than men's does in most cases. And there's a couple of statistics about this that have sort of proven that women, the economy today plays to women's strength. Our management style is more collegial, we're more communicative, we will read body language better, so then we become better negotiators, because even the unspoken word or issue we can kind of pick up on. So this is just really, it's beginning to translate into profitability in corporate America, and there are actually countries and companies that have decreed that, for instance, in public companies, that a certain percentage of the board members have to be women in order to ensure the profitability of the company. In Denmark, this was just last March that this happened, and it was kind of big on the news. Parliament decreed that women had to hold 50% of the board positions of public companies. And in Deutsche Telekom has a directive that women must hold 30% of the company's leadership positions. And at World Bank, it's 50%. Now, unfortunately, this hasn't begun to translate to the U.S. As much as it has to Europe, but it's coming. And women are really proving themselves as being very capable global leaders. And so this is sort of what we wanted to talk to all of you about today, and how you feel that you're coming into your own. And Chris has a lot of tips about how to help people come into their own. So, Chris, we were going to have a little chat about a couple of articles that you had sent me.
Yeah, before we do, why don't we kind of do a little bit of an introduction on who we are in terms of what we're all about. I know you gave a quick little bit about your book, but why don't you give everybody just a little bit more background on you, and I'll give them a little bit more background on me so they know who they're talking to.
Okay. I have the book was a fun project for me to do. I have a real job. I work for the Association of Corporate Counsel, which is a large legal association of attorneys that work in-house in companies as opposed to in law firms. I am executive director of the Northeast Chapter, which covers all of the New England states except for Connecticut, which considers itself to be part of New York. And we have over 1,100 members. So I manage all of, I manage the whole chapter. We do educational programs every month. We have a lot of sponsors. We have a diversity initiative. We do pro bono work. We started a women's initiative last year. And I work with a great board of directors. It's really been a wonderful job. And so that is me in a nutshell.
Good. And my name is Chris Cavanaugh, and I am a speaker, author, and coach who specializes in helping other people cultivate a CEO mindset in every area of their lives so their businesses, careers, and personal lives thrive. My company is called Shift. Because I basically shift people from where they are to where they want to be. And my website is www.begintoshift.com. I've been an executive and life coach for about 4 years, and I'm loving every minute of stepping out on my own and being a business owner for the first time in my life. It's an amazing and wonderful thing. So, all right, well, how would you like to start with the articles?
Chris, can I interrupt for a second? This is Mary Beth.
Absolutely.
I'm having a very difficult time hearing Louise. You're coming through loud and clear, but I can barely hear Louise.
Okay.
Agreed.
I'm really going to make an effort to speak loudly then. Is this better?
It is better.
Okay. I think I'll get rid of the headset. Hold on.
Hello, am I connected? It's Sabrina calling you from Italy.
Hey, well, you're competing with China for the two people that are furthest away. So welcome.
I tried several times, and I guess I'm a little late, but okay, here I am.
So
great.
Thank you for coming. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
All right. So, Louise, are you okay now?
Yeah, I hope that this sounds better. Everybody else is actually coming through much clearer. What does everybody think about women's management style? And have you found that women tend to be more collegial leaders, more communicative, consensus builders, this type of thing? Has anybody else experienced this? I mean, there's a great Time magazine article about it that I can send to anybody who's interested. Chris passed on to me, but I was just wondering if anybody else has experienced this personally. Go ahead and jump in.
I think we have more direction. I think we have more follow-through. I think we're on point more. I am the owner of my own business and have been very successful, I think, because of those qualities that I seem to carry with me. So if that's what you were asking for.
That is what I was interested in.
Yeah.
And also, you know, there's one thing I'd like to mention. A lot of people sort of use management style and leadership style as the same thing, and it's actually not. And I just recently read something about a Harvard Business School guru named John Kotter. You may be familiar with the name, but he's a prolific writer and a very interesting guy. And he says that management is a regulatory system designed to address complexity and create order, okay? And it's mainly internally focused. Leadership, which we're talking about today, is designed to guide people in the face of external uncertainty and change. And by definition, leaders need to take risks, they need to set direction, and they use their interpersonal skills, which women have in abundance, to get others on board to follow them.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that, because I'm actually in an MBA program, and I'm taking the leadership class, and it was the first time that I had actually had been taught clearly that managers and leaders, I knew they were different, but the textbook does a really great job defining the differences on a deep, deep level, that you could have a manager that's not necessarily a leader and a leader who's not necessarily a manager.
Right,
so it's
exactly.
It's two different skill sets.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the best when you're both.
Yes, and you can be both. But, I think in a lot of businesses, there has definitely been, they take somebody who's a good manager and they put them into a leadership position and nothing ever happens because he can't inspire other people to follow him. And this is actually where the fact that women are emotional creatures comes into play. The fact that we are emotional makes us good leaders because we get passionate about things and we do inspire people to follow us. And you should never consider being called emotional a put down. It's not. It's a compliment, and it makes you a strong leader.
And just even to take a little bit further on that, one of the things that I learned, I think 2 weeks ago in the class, is they actually broke it down into different types of followers, too. And we can touch on that a little bit later. But when you're a leader, it's important to know what types of followers you have so that you know how to lead them correctly.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah, and we can kind of touch on that a little bit later. So.
Okay, yeah. And I've got something here just very briefly, and I'll read it out. Northwestern professor Alice Eagly who specializes in the subject of gender differences, listed a couple of the differences in leadership styles between men and women. And the men's styles are characterized as being task-oriented, autocratic, command and control, and punishment-oriented. Okay, and women's styles are characterized as being team players, democratic, transformational, and reward-oriented. And you could certainly see that in certain times, the man's style would be more appropriate to the women's style, but how definitely the women's style is more collegial and inclusive. And certainly, I think in a global economy, probably a better style to work with. I think that the men's style seems to be more military to me in nature.
Yep. In one of the other articles we came across, they also said in terms of women's management style, it centers around communication and positive working relationships. They have better social skills, communicators. They keep people informed. It's really interesting. I mean, even if you just look at relationships in general, men tend to assume that women, you know, in their lives or people around them automatically know what's happening, whereas women don't necessarily assume that, so they will always keep other people informed and make sure people are knowing what's going on. They use their influencing skills rather than authority. They're better team players. Yeah, so that's just been really, really interesting to see all of that down in print.
Yeah, and one thing that's interesting, I've got a 20-year-old book called Brain Sex, and it says The Real Difference Between Men and Women, and it came out in the early 90s, I guess. And it actually gets into the physiological differences in brains between, and it starts at a very young age between baby boys and baby girls, and then as they evolve through childhood and into adolescence and into adulthood. And it's really fascinating to see how the actual differences in the brain have created these leadership abilities on the part of a woman. I think everybody knows that young girls, baby girls, start to vocalize earlier than boys do. They also start having direct eye contact with their parents and their caretakers much earlier and much more often and at a longer duration than the boys do, which is sort of interesting. Women hear better than men. So this gives us a better, we hear better inflections in tone and things like that. Or if somebody has raised their voice a little bit and it's a little louder, men won't really pick up on that. Women will. This is an inherent thing that we have in us. There was one interesting fact that I sort of thought was kind of cute, was that girls, 6 times as many girls can sing in tune as boys can. I mean, that's a real, it's not important to this conversation, but that's a real brain difference. Our brains are so different, and we know we all multitask better than men, and that is proven. Women can comfortably have both sides of their brains going at the same time, and men really can't do it. They always have to drop one side and pick up the other one. But the fact that you know, we hear better, we're more sensitive, even to the slightest touch, and we see better in the dark. I don't know if that's probably just a protection thing for, you know, caveman days or something like that. But there are so many differences in the actual brain and the way we process information. And it all leads to creating a person that works very, very well in today's economy. It's absolutely fascinating.
That's, absolutely. It's just amazing how gender, just genetically gender, plays a role in leadership. And the better leader you are, the more likely you are to be doing things right, which translates as a business owner or as a senior-level employee who's responsible for results. It translates into results, which is usually some sort of profitability.
Right, right. Plus the fact that because women are more communicative, they are more open to suggestion. And they're not always pushing forward their own agenda. They're more willing. Now, obviously, there are exceptions to this, and I'm sure we can all name a few. But, you know, they're definitely more open to suggestion and more open to consider another point of view that they hadn't previously. You know, I can think of many instances where that has happened. Or maybe not where it was a woman, but a man who simply would not listen to another suggestion, even though it was a very reasonable one and made good business sense, because, you know, he had his agenda and that was it. And women tend not to do that. It's very, very interesting. So, as you probably all know, Chris has sort of worked on this thing called the CEO mindset and becoming CEO of your own life. Her whole brand is based on helping people to become CEO of their own lives. And I'm hoping that Chris can tell us a little bit about that, because this also leads to a woman's power and using your power.
Sure, I'd be happy to. The reason I developed my brand around becoming CEO of your life is I really think that that is the key to long-term success, happiness, joy, and fulfillment. If you think about the struggles that so many people go through, it's not the struggle or the challenge itself that ends up causing people problems. It's the way people approach them. You can have, you know, two people in the same exact very challenging circumstance, and they will get through it in different ways simply because of the way they approach the challenge. And one of the things that I do as a coach is I help people change their mindset and change the way they approach dealing and managing their own life. And so, to take it even one step further, let me explain what the CEO mindset is. And I always use this example. I want you to think about the CEO of Google and the CEO of Coca-Cola. Those are two incredibly powerful companies. And those two CEOs get paid a ton of money because, in a sense, they have whatever the board of directors and people of influence think are important qualities to run those companies effectively. And those qualities consist of a whole bunch of things, including being a visionary, being able to take meaningful risks, staying on task, achieving goals, creating action plans to achieve goals, being willing to ask for help in certain ways if they need it, being able to tap into their support network, being able to just look beyond the current challenges that they're in and see where they want to be and continue to move forward in that direction no matter what. And so taking all of those qualities that CEOs have, in powerful CEOs have, if you would become that same exact CEO for your life, it would be a completely different approach to managing it. And it would be so much more powerful. You would get up every day and you would be confident that you could handle anything that life threw at you. And even if life ran you over, knocked you down, and knocked you out, you wouldn't stay down there very long because you knew that you needed to get back up and move forward. And being CEO of your life allows you to do that in a powerful way. And so that's kind of the CEO concept, the CEO mindset concept. It's a mindset shift to help you step out more powerfully in your life and work. Does that make sense?
It does to me.
Yes. Okay, great. So you want me to spend a couple of minutes talking about kind of the shifts that people need to go through to become CEO of their life?
I would like that. I read your book, Chris, but and I liked the whole five-step process. So if you could talk about the five-step process, that would be good.
Okay. So before you can even start to become CEO of your life, what I like to kind of clarify is, where are you now? I really think that most people in the world are spectators in their own lives. And here's what I mean by spectators. You're really just sitting back and watching your life go by. You're sitting in a passive place. And visually, if you'd imagine me sitting on a chair and having my life around me, it would be me sitting on the chair and all of a sudden hearing, meow, and that's me watching something in my life go by and saying, I wish that could be different. You know, like, meow, I wish I could be healthy. Meow, I wish I could spend more time with my spouse. Meow, I wish I liked my job. You know, it's that passive place. Well, all you're doing is wishing. You're not doing anything about it. And that's a place that most people are, and they feel overwhelmed, and they feel like life beats them down, and it's because they don't know how to make it different. And it isn't until you stand up and do something about your life that the process actually begins. And so the first step in the five-step shift process is being a parking attendant. And I've got these laid out in the corporate theme so that everybody could kind of relate to it. But when you're a parking attendant, you're really shifting your perception and connecting to the possibilities of what could be. And this is when you establish visions for your life and you really concretely defined what you want to have happen in every single area of your life. The next shift that you make is what I call the researcher phase. And this is when you shift your foundation and you own who you are. And here's what I mean by that. You are the only person that runs your life. Just you. And so if you are not completely honest with who you are, your strengths, your weaknesses, and what you're all about, then you can't step out powerfully. You have to admit what you're not really good at and delegate or get somebody else to take care of it or learn to do it better. And for your strengths, you need to capitalize on those and leverage those to the best of your abilities. And I always tell everybody that you should really invest in a personality test if you don't know what type of personality you are, because your personality tends to be a certain way. I'm sorry, did somebody say something?
I think it might
okay.
be somebody who had to jump off the call.
It's okay, got it. Oh, that's okay. If you have to go or you need to, you're in a kind of a loud area, you can mute using your own phone or you can mute using 4-star should self-mute you on. So either 4-star or just self-mute your own phone. So,
thank you.
You're welcome. All right. So you should really discover, if you haven't discovered, you should do something about discovering what type of personality you are, because that's really going to predetermine a lot of how you approach life. And it doesn't mean that you're never going to become something different than that. It just means that you will default to that in times of great stress or challenge. And I'll give myself as an example. When I took personality tests, every time I take one, I tend to be very dominant, type A, driven. And so control is very important to me. I very much like to control what's going on around me. And that's a strength and a weakness, and I recognize that. And so I have to be less controlling sometimes to be effective, and sometimes, depending on what the situation is, I have to be controlling. In my relationship, I have to be less controlling to be effective. Sometimes in my job and things that I have to do, I have to really be on top of stuff, so I have to be more controlling. So I have to know myself well enough to understand when I can leverage my control and when I can't. But I know either way, when I am extremely stressed, I will default to control quicker than anything. And sometimes my husband has to remind me that I need to stop being so controlling when I'm stressed. It's just, you know, oh, yeah, I'm doing that again because I'm stressed. So, you know, sorry, honey, I didn't mean to treat you like a child and tell you all these things you had to do. I'm just, you know, kind of stressed right now. It's one of those things. So that's the researcher phase. Really take time to figure out who you are so that you can capitalize on that information. The next step in the shift process, once you figure out who you are, is to shift your actions, and that's the manager phase, and utilize your power of choice. And this shift is when you decide you're absolutely going to start working on different action plans to get to achieve the goals that you set out earlier. And so you work on those plans and you do whatever it is you need to do. The shift from manager to vice president is the hardest shift. And the vice president shift is to shift your expectations and stay on top of your game. And the reason it's the hardest shift is because this is where the consistency has to come in. You can create your vision, which is shifting your perception. You can shift your foundation and own who you are and get everything in place that you have to get in place about you. You can create your action plans and get those all set. But unless you're actually consistent about doing them, a lot of things fall through the cracks and a lot of things tend to get off track. So consistency is key here. And then once you're consistent, that's when you get to this place as to you start becoming CEO of your life. You're really shifting your whole life so that you're proactive, you're living on purpose, you're doing things on a regular basis because you want to, because you're proactively creating the life that you want, both personally and professionally. You're at a place as to where you're thriving. Things get easier. They feel easier even in the midst of challenging chaos because you know internally that you're doing the best that you can and that you can handle anything that life throws at you. So those are the five shifts, and that's kind of the shifts that it takes to really get to this place as to where you just feel more confident and more capable of stepping out powerfully in your life and work.
I like that. And it keeps you from operating in a reactive mode, too.
Absolutely.
If you charge of your life like that, you're not being a reactive, you're being proactive.
That's right. And when you become CEO of your life, you're never perfect, obviously, because none of us is perfect. So it's just that place as to where you're more aware of what's going on. So if you do tend to get off track, you can get back on track more quickly.
The other good thing, too, about investing the time in a personality test is a lot of times, the only one that I'm particularly familiar with is the Myers-Briggs, and I'm sure a lot of you have heard about that before. But it actually shows you how you intake information and process it. And so it's nice to understand that about yourself, but then if you begin to understand it about other people, and you say, okay, well, this is this person's profile, and that means that, you know, he's just going to take much longer processing and will probably come to a slightly different end result than I would or something like that. But, again, that makes you more powerful because you can work with somebody better if you understand and can capitalize on these differences. It does make a big difference. And building a team to work on a project, if you tend to know these personality characteristics, you can put together a far more effective team, which will make your end result better and, of course, make you better in the company and more powerful. So, again, it's sort of the collegiality that helps you out there.
Yeah, and one of the other things is you can manage and lead your teams much more effectively when you know exactly how they're going to react on certain things based on their personality types and based on your experience with them. You know, there are certain people that I can be completely blunt and direct with, and I mean raw blunt and direct with. You know, this is how it is. This is the way it's going to be. This is when I need done. We need to do it now. You know, no holds barred, just this is what's going on. And there are certain other people that I have to talk to where I can't be that direct. I have to either set up the conversation so to prepare them for a hard truth or a challenge, or I have to say certain things in a certain way because I don't want their defenses to come up, which are going to inhibit progress. So personality tests help you know how to talk to other people as well.
Right, and you can play to their strengths, which
makes
them happy, makes you happy, and makes everything more productive.
Exactly.
Yeah, it really does make a big difference. Now, Chris, what about becoming CEO of your entire life? Why is this especially important for women?
Well, I think when you make a habit of looking at yourself as a whole person and not segmenting yourself into parts, it allows you in your head to really keep a 2,000-foot view of what's going on. When you are successful at managing who you are in every area of your life, you function well everywhere. And so as a business owner or as a executive, you are more capable of just staying on top of things, of being more effective and productive, because everything tends to run more smoothly when you get to that place as you're holistically approaching everything. Does that make sense, or do I need to clarify that?
I understand it.
I'm good.
Everybody okay? Else, any comments so far? Are we on track?
You ladies are welcome to chime in and participate as much as you like with this conversation.
Yep.
Well, I did have one question.
Yes, sure. Go ahead.
On personality tests, you know, the Myers-Briggs or whatever it is that you're taking, I understand that, and it's certainly useful to know things like, you know, different people learn differently, and certainly if you're dealing with, you know, an auditory learner as opposed to some other style, your presentation ought to be different. Are there differences that are gender-based that show in these personality tests, or are there differences that are just so inherent? I'm just thinking that in dealing with people, I may have a tendency to ignore the gender difference and treat people more alike than I should.
By the way, who is this that asked the question?
Carol.
Carol, okay. I guess I'll start and then you can add in. I don't think that personality tests so much distinguish gender as much as they do really just personality. I know that when I look at my personality, I have more male personality traits in terms of the way I approach life. I'm very logical, although I'm very good at feeling and emotions, but I tend to think logically first and feel second. I tend to be super driven, which is typically a male trait. So I think it's more about traits rather than genders. Would you agree, Louise?
Yeah, I would. And I've, it's been a number of years since I've done much with Myers-Briggs, but I had never heard about any specific gender differences.
I can't hear you well again, Louise.
You can't hear me again?
Yeah.
Okay.
I can now. That's great.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, I don't think that I've never heard of any particular gender differences that come out in these personality tests. I really do think that they're sort of asexual.
Right. Not necessarily that come out in them, but I guess what I'm thinking is you know, we're talking about huge differences in the brain, huge differences between the sexes. Are there things that should be coloring my attitudes over and above personality test results? You know, the fact that men can't multitask. You know, I've kind of known that. I lived with a guy that, you know, couldn't chew bubble gum and walk at the same time. I guess I never realized that it was a gender-differentiated trait, and I'm wondering how many others that I've missed that I ought to be taking in to account as a matter of course.
I can think of one right now, certainly body language. I mean, women are so much better than men at reading body language. It's the twitch of an eyebrow,
somebody crossing the arms, maybe turning the shoulders slightly in a defensive gesture. Men just don't pick up on this at all. And
I don't know about that.
In general, men don't pick up on it at all. Some do, but you know, I certainly live with a man that doesn't. And
your only experience.
No, I've been in some business situations where I've been in meetings and a man is rambling on about something, and one by one you can see every single person in the meeting begin to shut down.
Sure.
And then you have to jump in and use all of the communications and collegial skills that you have and try to do damage control.
Right.
I mean, it happens consistently, honestly.
Yeah.
I see that. Yeah.
I agree, but I never thought about that one either.
Yeah. Well, that's sort of the point of this call, is to make you realize what we're so good at that maybe we could be using more of to improve our lives. There's a lot that we are really just, it comes so naturally to us. And even if you're not using it in a business situation, it's going to help if you recognize your strengths.
And I think, just to allude back to what you said earlier, I think the strength of being holistic also lies in the fact that you are a better business owner, you are a better executive when you are taking care of every area of your life effectively. You don't bring the stresses of home into work. You don't bring the stresses of work back home because you are managing everything more effectively. And that's something that's learned. It's not necessarily natural, I think. But the more you can manage everything effectively, the easier it is to be focused on what you're doing at any particular moment, which essentially makes you more productive and effective in that moment. And that's, I think that's probably a strength anybody can learn, but I think that's something that, because we women are able to multitask better, that we can manage things better because of that.
I definitely think so, yeah. One interesting sort of male-female difference, too, and this came out about, I don't know, maybe 2 months ago, I did a little blog posting about how it seems like men can't see something that's right in front of them. You know, I mean, they open up a cupboard door and they're looking for peanut butter and they can't see it, and then the woman goes up and picks it out and it's right in front of their face. And I got an interesting comment on this from somebody who said, well, look, women were not that far from the trees, and women have always been the gatherers. You know, they're the ones that are picking seeds off of plants, you know, this little very close focusing. And men were the hunters and out there trying to look half a mile or a mile across the plains. And we honestly aren't that far away biologically from those times. And so that's why women are good at some of these minutia things, and the men are sort of a little bit more big picture. And I do think it's a biological difference. And now that I'm aware of it, I've been seeing more of it, which is also kind of interesting. Like, you really never stop learning. But the other thing that Chris and I wanted to talk to everybody about today was value-based decision-making. All right. Are most of you sort of familiar with that concept?
Mm-hmm.
Don't everybody talk at once. Okay. Values, as we know, are a major motivating force for people because we categorize how we attach meaning, worth, and importance to things. So when we make decisions, our values come into play. Our values very much determine how we will perceive any particular situation and how we will make a decision about it. Okay, so this is where, you know, it's important to know what your personal values are and then understanding how to make decisions that satisfy your personal values because your sense of self is also being strengthened by making that decision. Does everybody understand that? Have you had personal experience with that? Let's have a few people hop in and sort of let us know where their values led them to make the right decision, no matter what. Let's hear from a couple of you.
How about an example from you? Because I'm not sure I know exactly what you're talking about.
Say a value about being kind, all right, and being fair and being honest, all right? Those are values that I'm sure that most of us share, and they're ones that come into play when you are making decisions. Now, if somebody, for instance, at a cash register, you know, if somebody shortchanges you by a nickel or something like that, you're probably not going to say anything. But if somebody gives you $20 extra, you're probably going to say, hey, you made the change wrong. You know, I only should be getting this back, not 20-something back. Even though it would be to our advantage to have an extra 20 bucks in our pocket, we're not going to let our values down. We're not going to let our values down, and we will make a decision based on the values.
You're not going to compromise your values.
Yeah, we're not going to compromise our values. And sometimes we may have to adjust them a little bit, but, again, in the business world, the fact that I think women, because they are not as aggressive and assertive as men, their values come into their business decisions more often. And I do think that this helps with building the teams that women are so good at. They're good team players, and they are good team builders. Again, it's a strength because we don't have all of this sort of slightly military headset, the aggressive headset, that men tend to bring to the table in the business world. Does that make more sense?
And I don't – this is Chris. I think that values defined make things more powerful. I think a lot of people have a vague sense of what their values are. But it isn't until you actually define them that you are more apt to make decisions based on them. I know that one of the things that I do with some of my clients when I'm in a coaching relationship with them is I have them really think about, well, why is it that you're making this choice? You know, what is it that's important to you? And a lot of the times they want to do things because of certain values, like, you know, it's really, really, my family is valuable to me, and I want to make sure that I'm acting and being in a certain way that shows respect to my family, or that I'm building relationships because that's a value. And so once they define what their values are and they start checking their values or just looking at their values before making decisions, it sometimes helps them make difficult decisions easier.
So it's sort of like what Jiminy Cricket said about let your conscience be your guide.
Yeah, in a sense. In a sense.
Yeah, it comes down to that. It does. Yeah. So, do we have comments from anybody else on this? I mean, do you think we're on the right track here? Nobody's talking. Well, Chris, what's the next, what else do we want to move on to here? Support next.
And we also want to talk a little bit about assertive versus being aggressive, too. That was another thing we wanted to discuss.
And women, well, women are finally being able to be assertive. For a long time, you were sort of considered to be the, what were all those nasty things that they said about women who were assertive and stated their point and backed it up with facts and stuff like that? They were demasculating.
They were mostly bad words.
Mostly bad words. And demasculating. And happily, we've gotten over that hump, which is nice. I think women can be assertive, and it works because we don't tend to be aggressive. We will state the facts, we will back it up, but we don't push it on people too hard.
Do other people have that same experience? Let's have a few others chime in here.
Yeah, I'd love to hear some stories about situations that any of you have been in where you've had to either stand your ground and be assertive where you're at, or you've had to step forward and be assertive to get where you've wanted to go. I'd love to hear some stories about that.
I believe that, yes, I think that I'm assertive every day in my business, only because I am surrounded with men mostly all day, all evening, and work one-on-one with mainly all men. So I've teach myself, I suppose, how to get along in that world and be successful at it. And I have had the same subcontractors for many years now as a result of treating people with respect and then them, of course, honoring my wishes and my homeowner's wishes. I think that attitude plays just such a huge part and role in your business choices. You know, you can either be, you can walk into a room and demand respect, or you can walk into a room and have your shoulders all shriveled up and not know which way to walk. So I don't know.
Okay. And who was this, by the way?
This is Jenny.
Jenny. Okay, great. I just happened to notice, I'm looking at the call sheet, that somebody in the 918 area code has a question. I want to just note that. But, Jenny, did you have anything else you wanted to add before we moved on to the other question?
No, I'm good.
Okay. Who is the 918 area code? You had a question?
Oh, yes, this is Karen Major. I guess it was just a comment more than anything.
Sure, go ahead, Karen.
I think what you're talking about is very, very, you have no idea how meaningful this conversation is to me. I live in a state that is very, very conservative. I live in Oklahoma. I've lived here, our family's been here for 4 generations. And I'm finding more and more every day that the standards for me are going back to almost the 1950s. I'm expected to be pretty. I'm expected to be compliant. I'm expected not to speak up, not to make any waves. If I were to say a bad word, like, you know, words that are typical for some of my counterparts, it's interpreted entirely different. It's becoming extremely concerning to me. I have a daughter who is going to enter the workforce this year, and I'm worried for her. But anyway, it was just a comment to say that I really appreciate what you're talking about. This is great. Best thing I've spent my time on in a month. I appreciate it.
Oh, well, that's high praise. Thank you.
Maybe you could, I know that Chris is going to be putting out the recording that's going to be available online afterwards, and maybe you could get your daughter to listen to it.
I definitely will. Thank you.
Now, is she going to go out into the workforce in Oklahoma, or is she going to leave the state?
No, she is, and it's a different type of environment. It's not corporate. It's more accounting firms. It's a large accounting firm, and I do find that the diversity there and more women in leadership is probably a lot more common than the particular company I work for, which is, by the way, a great company, just being really, really heavily influenced and by the general culture, I guess. So she'll have a chance to do some more national-based things.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, and I do know, too, that the boss that she works for is he's been a longtime acquaintance of ours, and I know his specific feelings about things. So I'm hopeful for her. Worried but hopeful.
I guess my
question, too, is anybody else seeing this trend?
Going
a little bit backwards, like when you said that you think that the days of being called certain names or being considered negatively and being assertive are over. I'm not so sure that that is the case, and I'm just wondering if other people are noticing that.
This is Linda in. Go ahead.
No, Linda, go ahead. Go ahead. I'll wrap that conversation up.
Okay. This is Linda in North Georgia, and we are kind of in, I hate to say it, the good old boy state. And I have had several run-ins with male superiors who basically think they're sending girls out to do a woman's job, and they've actually said this to people in the company before. So we are getting the same kind of feeling that you are out there in Oklahoma. I actually, as a manager, was trying to hire somebody at one point in time, and in trying to deal with all the resumes, I wanted to filter out those who couldn't read, those who couldn't follow directions, and those who couldn't do math, because this was an accounting position. Well, I was given all sorts of flack because I was making up all these forms and making the people take all these tests. But, I mean, how else are you going to know, short of looking at a basic resume, they all look the same, who to actually call in for an interview? Because you're limited on time. You need to hire somebody right away. But the guys are over your shoulder micromanaging everything you do because they figure you're a woman and you can't make your own decisions.
Oh.
Well, you know, I read Catalyst a lot. I try to stay in touch with what Catalyst is thinking because they have a pretty broad view of the world and talk a lot about these things. And I guess what I'm worried about is that if I'm seeing these things and other people are seeing these things, when are we going to start seeing these things on a national level? Because then it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, just, I guess, more intellectual questions as much as it is practical.
Well, I mean,
thank you.
This is something where I think, you know, all of us, first of all, we have to be aware of this, all right? And we can't let it happen. We have to find out a way to not let it happen.
Mm-hmm.
We cannot gee whiz. But the thing is, this is one of those things where you can't operate in a vacuum. You know, you can't be... This is one thing where women's, and we were talking about a support network earlier, one woman can't do it, but you get a whole bunch of women together, bit by bit by bit, and things happen. That is how we got the right to vote 90 years ago, all right? That's how, because all of the women pulled together, and the men simply had to give in because we were too powerful a force for them to buck anymore, all right? And I think that if we see these trends, it's sort of like you're going to have to figure out the best possible way to put it across to the people that need to hear it, but do it in a way that they can hear it and just simply say, I will not be treated like this. And I think especially if you can come up with cold, hard facts that support your decisions and what you're doing, like you hire people that stay with the accounting firm for 5 and 6 years and are productive and stuff like that, as opposed to somebody who has to constantly be retrained because they don't know how to read or write. Things like that. And then you can certainly support your position. And then, oddly enough, doing the woman's thing of sharing, saying, look, I'll help you. Other people can use my hiring forms and we can have a much stronger team this way. I mean, maybe something like that would work. It can't hurt to try. But we can't let these things happen, and we simply have to try to find an effective way to work against it.
Mm-hmm. Carol has a question, but before I go to Carol, I just want to comment that in any time that change has taken place, whether it's been in a culture or in a community or in a certain situation, change happened because somebody initiated the change first. And then secondly, they looked for people around them who were willing to support the change. And if it's something like a gender thing, then look for males who support you. Because if you can get buy-in from the community that is typically against you, you can find people in that community, then you're standing much stronger because you've got the support of somebody that can speak on your behalf to the community that might be having issues with you. I mean, even in the civil rights movement, there were a lot of whites who stood up for blacks. during the civil rights movement. And thankfully they did, because it showed that there were people in that community who were unwilling to keep status quo the way it was. And they fought for the rights that they felt the African Americans deserved. And so look for people, if you're seeking change, look for people who can stand up with you to make that change happen, I guess is my comment. But Carol, I know we only have a couple of minutes left. Carol, do you have a quick question that you want to ask?
It was more in the nature of a comment, going back to the discussion of assertiveness versus aggressiveness. And it was just basically in agreement with the first respondent to that. I'm sorry?
No, go ahead.
I think that that is something that women have going for them. I think that, that we are, in many circumstances, we tend to be more assertive rather than aggressive. I mean, it took me years in my grooming business to learn how to do it. I'm a wimp by nature. And if, a customer had a complaint or wanted something unreasonable done to an animal, I would sort of hem and haw. And it took me a long time to simply state the facts. And that can be seen as assertive, and it can be seen as aggressive. You know, no, I can't brush out your completely matted dog. But I learned to couch it, you know, sort of sandwich it in the positives. No. It would be too difficult for your dog to brush him out and possibly cause injuring. What I can do, however, is shave him down, and although short, it will be comfortable, and we can begin again. I'll help you with a program on brushing and grooming so that we never have to do it again.
Very good.
Yep.
You know, that's kind of, it took me a long, long time. Part of me wants to say, lady, what are you, crazy? You're trying to kill your dog? You know, that takes me over into the aggressive end of the universe. It took a while, but I do think it's something that we have the natural skill for.
Okay, great. Well, why don't we, we've got about three minutes left or so. So let's kind of quickly wrap up. I know that, Louise, why don't you tell people where they can get your book if they're interested and want to learn a little bit more about it, and I'll do the same, and then we'll kind of just quickly wrap up.
Okay. I have a website, Seawordy, SEAWORDY.com, because I live and write by the sea. Seawordy.com. There are two books on there, the one about the glass ceiling issues, and then there's another one on entrepreneurship called It Takes Balls to Stay in Business, which I think you would all enjoy. And I'm also on LinkedIn, if anybody wants to connect on LinkedIn. And that's a very good place to get discussions going, by the way. So if you just sort of search on my name, you can find me and invite me to join you or something like that, which is good.
Okay. And if you're interested in learning more about how to become CEO of your entire life, you can get my book. It also has I also have a journal. You can go to Stuck, S-T-U-C-K, 2TOCEO.com. That's Stuck to CEO.com. And you can also get the book. There's a link to the book on my regular website. And I'm just going to throw out that if anybody really wants to become CEO of your life and you buy the book and the journal by the end of the day today or tomorrow, I'll offer up a complimentary 30-minute strategy session to kind of help you with that. I'll be willing to do that if you want. After you purchase the book, if you choose to, just email me, say that you bought the book and you want to take up the offer for the free 30-minute strategy session, which is valued at about $125 or so. But how do you want to wrap up, Louise? We've got about 1 minute left.
Somebody chime in and tell us what was the best thing you learned today. I would really like to know that. Please?
What a value did you get from the call? That's what we really want to know. What a value did you get from spending an hour with us today?
Well, I'll speak up. This is Karen. The value of taking responsibility in areas other than just my job. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
That's great.
Okay, great.
Knew it, just need to be reminded.
Okay. Mary Beth, you're still on the phone. Would you like to tell us what you got of value out of the call?
Well, it's a more internal reflection in terms of my current employment situation and some of the obstacles that I'm running into in terms of practicing the assertiveness and the kind of brick walls that I'm facing as I go through this. So there's more thinking that needs to happen, but
okay.
Initiating that thinking.
Oh, okay. Well, just to give you a quick tip, if you can become clear on what it is that you want, all being assertive is standing your ground and proactively trying to make that happen.
Yeah, and I'm absolutely doing that, but sometimes there are people that don't want you to have your ground.
Yes, yes, that's very true, very, very true. All right. Okay, does anybody else, before we wrap up, want to tell us what a value you got from the call? All right, looks like everybody is ready to go.
Okay, well, it's been great talking to all of you. Thank you for participating. I think most
Thank
people
you.
Probably dropped off.
And what I'll do is I'll send everybody a link with the recording. Louise will have your email addresses as well, so she can touch base and say thank you. But great, it was awesome to have all of you guys here, and we're thrilled that you were able to attend. So thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, take care, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.